This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told. And maybe you can hear it in my voice, my horrible nasally voice. I have a cold. And yeah, it's never good on tour when you're the singer in a band and you have a cold and you have to perform. And that's exactly what's going on with me over here. I'm in Europe with my band Silverstein. We are on tour with Anti-Flag. Awesome, awesome tour so far. Tickets, all the shows have been selling out pretty much. It's been a rager getting along with the Anti-Flag guys so well. We're sharing a bus, actually, which is pretty cool. 16 dudes on one bus. It's a riot. But those close quarters, those late nights, they've caught up with me. And here I am with this cold. And it's something that I think doesn't get talked about on this show very often is what do you do when you get sick on tour? And the answer for most people is the show must go on. You got to do it. You can't shut it down. We're all out here. We got a bus. We got a crew of people. We got tickets sold and people that want to see us play. So canceling a show, not an option. You got to make it work. And of course, there's remedies, you know, all kinds of cough drops and Advil. And for me, it's mostly just a lot of water. And luckily today, we have a day off in beautiful Munich, Germany. So I'm taking it easy. I'm chilling. I'm recording this in the back of the bus. Speaking of this episode, we have a good one. I speak to Mr. Ryan Kirby of Fit for a King, another band you guys have requested a lot, not just recently, but especially recently, with their new album being so highly touted. People are really raving about this one. Last week, we had Spencer from Ice Nine Kills, which a great episode. Their new record is being talked about for Album of the Year. You can put Fit for a King's record right up there beside it. It is a great record. It is out now. Check it out. There's some hits on this thing. And it really was great to pick Ryan's brain about their band, the Christian aspect of their band, how important that is to them, to their fans. And of course, we talk some Dallas Cowboys football. Quite a lot of Dallas Cowboys football. So, yeah, I don't know. It is what it is. You can take it or you can leave it. Feel free to fast forward through it. It's all good. I want to remind you guys, in case you forgot, Halloween is almost here. We're like, what, like 10 days away? It is really, really coming up fast. Now, if you haven't got a costume yet to wear, head over to rockabilia.com. They have the coolest rock-themed costumes, masks from all your favorite spooky bands like The Misfits, like Motionless in White, Marilyn Manson, Rob Zombie. Check it out. Very cool stuff there. And of course, the best selection of t-shirts, hoodies, all that stuff you're going to need for fall. So head over to rockabilia.com and of course, use our promo code PCJabberJaw to save 15% off your order today. I personally do not have my Halloween costume picked out quite yet. I'm a bit of a crammer, but I'll figure something out. And when I do, I'll post it on the Instagram. By the way, thank you to everybody who follows Lead Singer Syndrome at Lead Singer Syndrome on Instagram, because we just hit 10,000 followers. So now we're talking in Ks. So it says 10K when you go to our Instagram. So make sure you head over there. Give us a follow. Everyone's doing it. Also, we're on Twitter. It's at Lead Singer Syn, S-Y-N. Don't sleep on Facebook. We have a great Facebook page run by Julia, Melissa, and Neil. Go check it out. Follow us. Make sure you get on that. And if you want to send me an old-fashioned email, that's an option for you. I read all my email. I'm not great at replying, but I try my best. Hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. If you want to help out the show, the best way to do it is to become a member of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. For as little as $6 a month, you get access to so much bonus material. Interviews with non-lead singers. I do that on the bonus episodes. And some extra ones with lead singers. Also, an amazing community of like-minded music fans, fans of this show. I'm on there posting every single day. I'm also on there doing question and answer sessions, playing some tunes, all kinds of good stuff. And for $9 a month, you get a welcome package. You get patches set every 3 months. You get access to incredible Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise. We run contests. There's so much good stuff to be had. And it is what keeps this show going. It's the best way to support it. So head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. And that's all you got to do. Plug in that link, give me a pledge, and we're all set. Speaking of all set, I'm going to give my voice a bit of a rest. I apologize for the sound of it. But here's my conversation with Ryan Kirby of Fit for a King. Every day we're blowing gold. Mr. Kirby, how you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, man. It's Shane from Silverstein, Lead Singer Syndrome, on the telephone. Can you hear me okay?
Okay, now. I was trying to get my headphones to work. They weren't, but now they're working.
Ah,
so we're good.
That's good. Yeah. It's funny, you know, I got all my podcast equipment, and, like, I need headphones, right? So I bought, like, good headphones, you know, like nice, like, I don't know, they were Sennheiser or Audio Technica or like a nice brand, you know. So they broke in, like, I'm not even kidding, like a week. The one ear just stopped working. So I'm like, ah, shit. So I went back out to, you know, the nice store, and I got whatever, the other brand. I don't remember. The first was Sennheiser, second was Audio Technica. So then I bought the other one. They were like, you know, like $70 headphones, like earbuds, you know, and like they lasted like 2 weeks. So I'm like, fuck this. I went to Radio Shack. I bought the cheap $9.99 headphones. I've had them for 2.5 years.
Some cost.
That's right. And they, yeah, cost, dude. Cost was my jam when I was a kid. Yeah, dude. So,
and, hey, there's a reason they're still around.
Right? Yeah. So, no, and they sound whatever. They don't sound as good as the other ones, but at least they don't break. So,
oh, it's so funny going to studios and you see like just a bucket of dead headphones.
Yeah, I know.
And it's all these really nice, like Shure and Sennheisers and Audio Technicas.
Somebody could make a fortune.
I just don't understand how studios break headphones so frequently.
I don't know.
Like, do bands throw them on the ground after a take? Or
I've definitely had that happen before. Like, out of frustration, I've like definitely maybe not thrown them on the ground, but dropped them. And even sometimes out of excitement, like you take the headphones off after a take, you like go to run in the control room to hear what it sounds like. And then they kind of hit the ground. So I could see them breaking, definitely.
I know some people like squeeze the headphones, so maybe somebody way stronger than me.
It's funny, I was just recording some vocals. You all right? That sounds like some crazy sounds.
Yeah.
What is that?
I'm passing sound check right now. I'm walking outside.
No problem.
To go, A, get better reception. You probably played at Old National.
Oh, Indianapolis? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I figured I should probably get out of the basement before a call drops.
Yeah, no, you sound pretty good on my end, man. But it's funny. I was just recording some vocals myself, and like, you know, I do singing and screaming. And when I sing, I'm pretty like, you know, I just kind of stand there and sing. But when I scream, I usually try to hold the microphone, and like I really let it rip, and like my whole body convulses. And a lot of times, my headphones they actually fall right off my head when I'm doing a take.
That's great. Hey, you're getting way more into it than me. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's because I have to push a little harder to get the screams out. For you, it just seems to like flow so naturally. I don't know. Am I right?
Screaming for sure is like really easy now. I started singing this last record, and that's been the real thing. Just whatever you've done longer, singing is more effortless. For you,
right?
For me,
no, that totally makes sense, man. But yeah, I mean, and I mean, I have to bring up your new record. We're going to talk all about it later. Which it's a tremendous record, Dark Skies. It's been out just for a few weeks now, but I want to talk about one specific thing, and it is the scream. Can we talk about the scream in Backbreaker? The world's longest scream.
It's so miserable to do,
but yeah.
People like, so it's one of those things where you're like, I'll do it for the kids.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, right? You do it, you do it on the record, and you know you only have to do it probably maybe a double, but I don't know if you double your screams or
and
not.
It's
but.
So nice in the studio. It's like 70 degrees, or hey, if you're in Canada, it's 21 and 22.
Yes, and then, yes.
You're kind of like perfect. You take a nice drink of water, take a big breath, and go for it, as opposed to it's at the end of a song. And like on our set on this tour, we play our first three songs without a break, and
yeah.
It's the third song. So I'm just like dying. But I just tell, sometimes I like have, when I'm doing it live, I like think about random stuff. Like, I hope my wife's having a good day. Or like, I wonder if that guy in the corner that's just giving me a death stare is enjoying this. Maybe this will win him over.
That's really funny. That is true, though, man. I don't think anyone's ever brought that up. Like, how, you know, not to say like we go through the motions as singers of bands, but sometimes that happens. Just like I'm sure anyone's job. Like, let's say you sell insurance and you're on the phone. And you're trying to sell insurance for the 18th or 19th time that day. And, you know, you're asking them about what kind of premiums they want. Maybe your mind might wander
it's
a little bit.
It's memory.
You know? And it's very true that you might be in the middle of this heart-wrenching song that you've poured your heart and soul into. But you know what? When it's the 500th time you've sang it or screamed it, yeah. You might be wondering.
Exactly.
You might be wondering. Yeah, so I wonder if my wife ended up getting that that new quinoa at Whole Foods. I was like, wanted her to pick up for me.
Exactly. And I've thought even like, I wonder. I should probably check my bank account today. It's been a few days. Make sure everything's good. It's I don't think people realize, like, I'm sure even when you're on stage, I know it's for me, there's some parts I'll think about what I'm going to say to the crowd for the next part.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I need some cool pump up ideas. I don't want it to sound cliche, and I'll be like screaming while thinking about it. And people are like, oh, how'd you come up with that one weird thing you said about getting the crowd pumped? Like, oh, I thought about it the whole song until it came up to the build-up.
That's funny. Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. Usually when that happens to me, it's kind of like, you know, when you're at the dinner table and everyone's having a conversation and people, you know, and I don't know, you seem like more of a bit of an introverted, a bit of a quieter guy. You know, maybe not around your close friends and stuff, but you know, like when there's this, everyone talks about something and then the conversation moves away, but you had something really interesting or funny to say, but it was like 5 minutes ago. I find that tends to happen with me. Like something will happen the song before or during the song, and then the end of the song comes and I'll have planned out what I'm going to say, but then the moment has just passed and it just like doesn't work anymore.
Man, it would have been perfect if I had just said that. And then the crowd would have lost their minds.
I know. Well, I've said stuff in the middle of songs before, too. And it's funny for me. But usually the crowd's like, what the hell are you doing, man? Like, just do your job.
Do your part. Fans love to do your job.
That's right, man. So you're in Indianapolis with Devil's Prada and 68. Is that the tour?
Correct.
How is that going? It's a bit of a nostalgia tour, throwback tour for Devil Wears Prada. What is it like for you guys? With, you know, obviously you guys are really focusing on your current music, and they're kind of dwelling a little bit into their past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is like a weird mix. I didn't even think of it that way. But right. We're out here, our whole set, basically, I think 6 of 9 songs is off the new record, and then 10 of 13 songs of theirs is off one from 10 years ago.
Right.
So I was really curious when this tour started, like, how's this going to go? Like, how many people are coming to the show that haven't even listened to metalcore in 10 years? Just due to, like, oh, I want to see Prada play this old record I used to love. And I was like, so how does that change to us? And the tour has been insanely easy. It's the first 3-band package we've ever done.
Yeah.
And 68 is only a 2-piece
right.
band. So
that's,
I guess, the first 2.5 band package that we've done.
But yeah, I mean, you're talking about 68, who has, I mean, obviously Josh Scoggin, you know, of the Chariot, has a rich history with metalcore and, you know, Christian metalcore, and Devil Wears Prada being, you know, founders of Christian metalcore as well. It's interesting because you guys are sort of one of the only newer Christian metalcore bands on Solid State Records, still of that ilk. You know what I mean? Of a kind of music that I think peaked a long time ago. Yet here you guys are with a crushing new record, as relevant as ever. It's kind of interesting that these bands are all coming together, and how things have sort of shifted musically, but here you guys find yourself on a great tour.
I think a big difference between us, and I guess because you say it died out a long time ago, and I think that kind of Christian band did die out a long time ago.
Right.
As far as the really outspoken preaching on stage, every song is about Christianity. Because bands like us and Silent Planet, I think the other day I tweeted about, like, I don't even like the term Christian band a ton anymore, because I like, on our new record, there's one song about Christianity.
Right.
And on the last album, we had 2 songs about Christianity. And I was like, I just write music. I write lyrics. I'm a Christian. Sometimes that happens to show in the lyrics. And then other times it just doesn't at all.
Right.
And I'm not somebody who likes to preach on stage, and that's where I kind of made a comment earlier about how fans like to tell us how to do our job. I definitely have some of those Christian fans that want to live really hard in the past.
Totally.
And like how, and they're like, oh, you guys are a Christian ministry, so you need to go preach on stage and use the platform God gave you. And I'm like, first off, never once in my entire music career have I said we're a ministry. So you're kind of just projecting that onto us. And second of all, if I want to preach, I'll preach. And I don't want to preach.
Right.
So would you rather me fake it and have it like a really disingenuous message on stage? And because sometimes I'm like, you know what, sure, maybe we could be even bigger in the Christian world if we preached, but I don't want to like give a fake message to gain more fans. And at the end of the day, half of our fans, if not more, aren't even a Christian, and they paid to watch us play music, so I want to play some music for them.
Right. No, I get that. And I mean, the biggest, you know, probably the biggest Christian metalcore band ever of all time isn't a Christian band at all anymore and aren't Christians anymore, and that's Under Oath. And that was a band that was, I mean, I remember touring with those guys back in 2005. We went to Europe together for the first time ever, and they used to have nightly Bible study, and they, you know, were as, they didn't drink, they were as straight-laced Christian, you know, they preached, they did it all. And now you talk about a band that is so far removed and has removed themselves from that completely. You know, I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, that's a whole different thing.
My opinion on what happened to Christian metal is it used to be hip to be a Christian, as weird as that sounds. Like, it used to be like, yeah, we have three members, let's just call ourselves a Christian band. Then we could go play some huge Christian festivals.
Right. Yeah. And Cornerstone and all those ones. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think stuff like Westboro Baptist Church and a lot of like this like anti-LGBT sentiment a lot of Christians were giving off, and a lot of hatefulness a lot of Christians were giving off, were starting to get promoted as this is the norm for what Christians are.
Right.
And I think a lot of bands were like, that's not us, and I don't want to be a part of that. And that's why I've always been a little iffy on the term Christian band now more than ever. It's like, because I don't dislike gay people. I love gay people. I love straight people. I love all types of people, because I believe the overall theme of the Bible is unconditional love. And I think the church has turned away from that and is extremely judgmental.
Right.
Of people, regardless of what they believe is right. Like, I've met so many super close-minded fans that will get mad at me when I'm like, if someone wants to be gay, let them be gay.
Like, well, I don't think choice. It's even, I don't even think it is a choice, to be honest. You're, you know,
no, it isn't.
So
I
that's,
agree with that.
You know, that's, but I understand, like, I guess that it, there is still an old school, you know, divide. That comes up with that, and it's I totally understand that that's a problem, you know, and I mean, not even talking about politics, but I mean, that's a problem too when you're talking about how far driven apart the sides seem to be. And I guess that you know, that's happening in politics, and that's happening in Christianity as well.
And I did misspeak. I don't believe it's a choice.
Right.
And I guess the biggest thing that a lot of Christian fans got mad about a while ago with me is, so there's this, you know, we talked about the political side. I'm a Christian, or identify as one, therefore people believe, oh, you're a conservative Republican because you're a Christian.
Well, and, you're also from Dallas, Texas too, so.
Exactly. And, so all of that's working against me and people like. And so when I came out and said, I think gay marriage should be perfectly legal and there's zero issue with it, and I voted for gay marriage in Texas, and people were like mad that I did that. And I'm like, I don't think religion should ever influence the laws of a country.
Right.
And so, and people were mad about that. Obviously, I'm like, I like to think of myself as very in the center. And because my belief is that on the left, there's a lot of things that are wrong. On the right, there's a lot of things that are wrong. But in the center, somewhere lies the truth.
Sure. Sure.
So I try just not to identify, because I think Democrats are right on some things. I think Republicans can be right on some things. But usually I agree with Democrats on social stuff. And then I guess across the board, like, I think people should be able to practice their life however they want to, or live their life however they want to, as long as it doesn't affect other people and they just live their own life. And I shouldn't have any part in interfering with that.
No, absolutely. And, absolutely.
I guess rounding as I ramble, looking back at, like, the identifying as a Christian thing, I get painted as, like, oh, you're super hardcore on all social issues. Like, you don't think anybody should ever be anything other than straight, or anybody should ever be respectful of somebody in the way they identify themselves. And it's super frustrating because you're almost having to fight an uphill battle in every conversation. And then as soon as I say, no, I don't feel that way, then you have a lot of, like, the really hardcore Christian, evangelical Christian mob saying, wait, that's not very Christian of you to say that.
Right.
So it's kind of a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, totally. You can't, you just can't win. But I mean, I know the guys you're on tour with, I mean, you know, I had shared buses with Devil Wears Prada before, and Jeremy and Mike are extremely outspoken in terms of their beliefs, you know, as Christians, and also politically, and, you know, they're very progressive. You know, Josh Scoggin is also somebody that's, you know, very progressive with their thinking and their beliefs. And I mean, I guess that is the new norm. And I think that that's healthy, you know, I think it's healthy.
Exactly. And I think the biggest issue, because I grew up in a very conservative, typical, like, Texas Republican household. So obviously, I think for the beginning years of people's lives, they reflect a lot of what their parents teach them. Yeah. And my parents are very loving people, but I don't think they've seen the world. They definitely haven't seen the world like I've seen.
Right.
In it.
Right. Well, it does change you. I mean, when you start to go to all these other countries and you see all these other cultures and the way that they live, you know, it definitely does affect, you realize, like, nobody gives a shit about high school football in Europe. You know what I mean? And that's, for some people where you grew up, that's, like, almost like a second religion to Christianity.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, absolutely. Are you a Dallas Cowboys fan?
Big time.
It's funny. So my girlfriend, I've been with her for about a year and a half now. And she's a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. It's the only sport she likes is NFL football. And she's a huge Cowboys fan. So I've somehow become a Cowboys fan. And I've been watching all the games for the last year and a half.
Last night was rough.
It was not great. It was not great. You think they should fire Garrett?
Oh, I'm all over firing Linehan and Garrett. Have you watched much football? Like, do you understand a lot of the, like, intricacies of some of the coaching decisions?
Oh,
I don't know how long
you've
watched.
I'm a huge fan. I watched as a child the Bills lose four Super Bowls in a row. So I'm well aware of coaching bad coaching decisions.
Okay, so last night, or Sunday night, Garrett did something that is just an overall, like, summary of what's wrong with him. Whenever the Texans went out to go kick the game-winning field goal in overtime.
Right, when he didn't go for it on 4-1?
That one, also really dumb, because the Cowboys are 18-19 under Jason Garrett on 4th-and-1s. So that's a whole, like, that was just plain stupid. The field goal thing kind of just shows how he doesn't pay attention to the details of the game. So he called the timeout before the kicker was about to kick the field goal. So he didn't ice their kicker.
Right.
Before he went out, I'm like, wait, but you called a timeout anyways. Why wouldn't you call it right when he's about to kick it to maybe ice him? Like, that's right. A normal practice. And it's just little things like that where you're like, that was really stupid. Why are you even calling a timeout? It's a game-winning kick. You don't need time on the clock. If he misses it, it's still tied.
Right. That's true.
So I think there's enough seasons of going 8-8. And you've seen this offense the last, like, 12 games.
Yeah.
It's atrocious.
No, it's a bad offense. The defense has been very good, though.
It has. It's been excellent. I love Marinelli. I do think Jason Garrett could ruin Dak Prescott, him and Linehan. Like, this play calling is bad. They're not even using Prescott to his advantages, like his speed and his toughness. Look at the Rams, for example. McVay designed his entire offense around Jared Goff. Like, right. He catered to Goff. And that offense is humming. Whereas when Jeff Fisher was in St. Louis, it was awful and Goff was doing terrible and people thought he was a bust.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the ball team a certain way. But if you don't have your football team built that way, you can't play that way. You have to play to your strengths. And I don't know why they don't run Elliott more. You know, I don't know why they're constantly trying to throw to receivers that are no good. You know, but hey.
The receivers are so bad.
Yeah, I mean, people were like, oh, Dez Bryant sucks. Let's let him walk anyways. And now it's like, oh, damn. He would be pretty nice to have right now.
My stance on Dez is I don't think he fixes it completely, but he's sure a hell of a lot better than what they have on their team right now.
There you go.
So, love if they brought him back for like a really cheap 1-year deal. Just to like, hey, let's see how your attitude is.
Right.
And maybe things are better. And then if it works out, give him a couple-year deal after the season's over.
Yeah, totally. And losing Witten, too, is probably a big part of it. And also, he's a great locker room guy as well. So, but hey, how about back to music? What do you think?
I think so. I'm good with music. Cowboys are making me sad.
it's tough, but you know, the division is so bad. Like, Philadelphia's 2-3. I actually didn't see. Did Washington?
Are 2-2.
They lost last night, didn't they?
They lost. Yeah.
So I mean, it's a weak division, I guess. So you know, anything can happen.
They're supposed to be strong. Don't
supposed
know what
to
happened,
be.
But...
Yeah, I don't know, man.
At least you're not a Bills fan anymore.
Well, I am. I'll always be a Bills fan. Always. But
I'm glad you're not a bandwagoner. I guess you can root for both separate conferences.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's what I do in hockey too. I've always had a East Coast team, which is the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then I allow myself a West Coast team, and that's the Las Vegas Golden Knights. So I think you're allowed to
great,
do that.
Great first season.
Yeah, and in baseball you can have like an American League team and a National League team. That's definitely acceptable.
Exactly.
All right, man. So diving back into some music talk, and I do appreciate the sports talk. I don't know if the listeners of the show do, but fuck them. Bobby, he's out of the band. Kind of unexpected. A guy that I knew pretty well, probably talked to the most in your band. I know, kind of a major contributor, songwriter.
So, Bob, we've been dealing with this situation for about probably a year.
Yeah.
And I started with our tour a year ago when we did a co-headliner, and he just looked really miserable. Like, the tour was going great, and things were really going good for the band, and he just looked really sad the whole tour.
Yeah.
So we knew something was going on. Like, he had just had a second kid. He was really bummed, understandably.
Totally.
So he took our Europe tour off, and then he decided, I probably just don't need the tour anymore. And we were really supportive of the obviously supportive of it, because I don't like seeing my longtime friend that I've been in bands with before.
Yeah.
This band even.
Yeah, totally.
Just, like, he was like a shell of himself. He just missed his kids so much. And so he hasn't done the last few tours with us, but I think he finally noticed we were having to cover for him all the time. He's like, I'm just going to make an announcement.
Right, yeah. For your fans, your fans are asking you what's going on, and you're like, you don't know what to tell them.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't want to say we don't have a guitarist until we have a guitarist, because as predictable as it was, as soon as Bob made the announcement, my inbox was just flooded with "let me try out for guitar" messages.
Right.
And so I had to make another post on my Facebook, like, hey, I appreciate that you really want to be a part, but we can handle it.
Right.
It's so I'm glad Bob finally got it off his chest. He always leaves the door open to, touring, though. Like,
right.
And it's close. He's like, maybe you'll see me on the stage again. And I'm like, which one is it, Bob?
Well, I mean, I could definitely see it happening.
You don't want to commit.
Where, well, yeah, I mean, he's making a commitment to his wife and his kids and his family and his plant business, which is pretty cool. He's selling plants. Fully respect that. You know, he's making a commitment to that. But I could definitely see, you know, give it a year and a half, 2 years. Maybe he, you know, has some memories, you know. Because obviously when you're in the moment, you know, touring can really suck. But then you think back, it's the same way when you think back to when you were like 14 years old, like riding your bikes, you know, around getting candy at the corner store with your friends. Like, you might like long, like at the time you're like, whatever, I wish I was older. But now you're like, I wish I could go back, you know? So he might have, he might have those kinds of feelings, and maybe he'll come in and jump in for a tour or two. I mean, it's possible, right?
I guess it depends. If we don't have a full-time guy and nobody we're really looking at, then absolutely we'd love to have him on a tour. And I was really real with him. I was like, if there's a tour that, because obviously plant stops slow down a lot in the winter. I was like, hey, if there's ever like a winter tour and we just don't have a guy, and yeah, come do the tour.
Right.
But if it's like a tour, I'm like, hey, there's this guy we really like, and there's a couple guys we really like right now, and we're just trying to figure things out, because every tour we don't take one of those guys, we're further away from having like a cohesive unit again.
Totally.
So I think it's definitely realistic he could be on a tour with us again, and he's still like fully writing for the band. He's reiterated multiple times, he's like, I want to write as long as you guys want me to write, because I think that's his way to just stay connected with this part of his life. And I think that's a big reason, and we could even get into this because I think a lot of people would really be interested to hear this, is about musicians that don't really want to let the dream die even when they leave touring, because it seems like a lot of bands are coming back,
right?
I think he wants to leave the door open, because to say I'm never touring again, that's so much finality for somebody who's 27 years old.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think that that's great. I mean, because the timing of the statement, you know, you guys just putting out a record, and the focus should be on that. It should be on the new record, on you know, your new rise to you know, the top of the genre, which is happening right now. You know, putting out the best music you've ever put out. So to have him, you know, say, oh, I'm leaving the band, it's like, I mean, it's a bit of a distraction for what's going on. And it's also like, wait, if this is like, if they're at the top, their peak right now, then why is the guy leaving? Right. So it is good that, that you guys have such a amicable split where you guys are both talking about how much you love each other. And also the fact that he's still going to contribute, you know, musically with you guys is a great sign for your fans, because most bands would
say,
yeah, well, most of your fans would be really, really terrified right now if that wasn't what he was saying and what you were saying.
Oh, I remember growing up, and when bands would lose their, like, songwriter, I was like, oh, great. I'm my favorite band now.
Yeah. Yeah,
but,
I know.
Yeah. He lives 10 minutes from me, and we still hang out and run.
I love it. I love it, man. You know, it's funny, too. Like, you guys did Warped Tour in a van back in, was it 2017?
Yeah, we did it in 2014, 15, and 17.
Yeah. And, you know, for you guys to be in a van, you know, in 2017, you know, you guys are one of the, I mean, I wouldn't say you're one of the biggest bands on the tour, but you were pulling your weight on the stage. I mean, you were one of the biggest bands on the Monster Mutant energy drink stage, whatever they were calling it. And then you guys, you know, there's smaller bands than you guys that are going and retreating into a very nice bus, or at a minimum a bandwagon, and then there's you guys driving overnight in a van. I mean, that's like, some people would say, I mean, how could anyone last that long, you know, as a band doing it that way, how difficult that was on a tour like Warped Tour.
It's like, man, you don't even know the half of it for the 2017 one. That was beyond the whole, like, you're in a van and it's really hot out. We had to spend $12,000 in repairs over the tour to keep that van running.
Oh, my God.
We took that van on tour with 350,000 miles on it. And it was... So I think more than the heat, the breaking down was making everyone really on edge the whole tour. But the way we look at it, we've never been on a bus, never been on a bandwagon, so we don't know what we're missing out on quite yet.
Right.
Because I'm sure the second we do a bandwagon or bus, I'm going to be like, man, I could never back. But we did. We treated ourselves and bought a Sprinter and built it out. So
yeah, that's
things
cool.
Are a little nicer now.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I remember we did a tour one time. This was in 2010, and it was a Day to Remember, one of their biggest first, like one of their first big headliners that they did.
And that August Homesick tour.
Yeah,
so,
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. Tour Sick, and August Burns Red was direct support, and they were in a van. Making God knows how much money as direct support on that tour, and we were second. We were second of four, and we were on a we were on a bandwagon. It was the first bandwagon ever, actually. We were on, and we like had toured on buses, you know, for at that point for 5 years without being in a van, and there was no way we were going back to a van, and we haven't gone back to one since. So you're right, you know, stay in the van as long as you can, and that's what August Burns Red did.
You don't miss what you don't know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, good for you guys. And I mean, yeah, you get
to. And I always tell people when they ask about, like, how did you make it through? Because there were days we just didn't talk to each other because we're like, hey, it's Phoenix. We're all going to be at each other's throats. Let's just go do our own thing and be miserable in separate areas of the festival. And so we would do that. And I always. So a lot of bands would offer spots like not to ride with, but hey, come hang out AC whenever you want.
Right.
And all of us, we almost never took up bands on that offer because we were like, this was our choice to be in a van. We make enough money to take a bandwagon.
Right.
It's just not, we chose to take this van. You guys chose to take your bandwagon. Enjoy your bandwagon. Like, so. Because we respect if you choose to spend your money on it. We don't want to take up space because we were cheap. But I always tell fans or other bands when they're like, how did you make it through the tour? I was like, the first week or two is fine. 5 weeks in the middle are absolute misery. And then the last week, you're like, I'm about to make money. And life's a little easier knowing it'll pay off.
Right. Right. Other than the 12 grand, but I mean, I guess if your van was already shitty, you know, it was what it was. Are you a homeowner?
I am.
There you go. See, there's the difference. Ask all those bands.
Hey, that's the Warped Tour money.
Right. Ask all those bands that toured in buses on Warped Tour if they're homeowners, and they're going to say, "Oh no, I got a one bedroom apartment I rent for." I don't know. It depends where you live, I guess.
My friend's house.
Yeah, right. I'm couch surfing at the moment, which hey, I've been there myself, so I'm not knocking anybody.
Hey, same. I rented a room out for 5 years.
Yeah, that's it. Nothing wrong with that, man. You got to do what you got to do to make it work. You know,
exactly.
You're lucky you live in. I guess Dallas is a average city. Like, it's not that expensive. It's not that cheap, you know, so you can make it work. It's like, it's always
been
tough.
Rising, but it's getting okay. Rent is getting up there. A lot of Californians are moving to Dallas.
Yeah.
You've played in the Deep Ellum area.
Oh, yeah. It's cool. It's a cool area. Yeah. It's actually.
My wife and I looked at an apartment there just like, hey, maybe we should just live in a cool area in like a one or two bedroom just to be for a year. And so we looked at some studios. And Deep Ellum, they're going for $1,900 a month for 400 square feet.
Yikes. That is crazy.
And they're like, all right, maybe not.
Yeah, that's but, really...
houses
that's
are still pretty affordable there.
There you go, man. Good for you. Good for you. And then, there you go. There's that Warped Tour money. So I want to get into the nuts and bolts of the record a little bit. If you don't mind, Dark Skies, for anyone listening to this, is out now. It's a terrific record, a record I have enjoyed a lot. And to be honest, I don't listen to a lot of, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, metalcore. I don't really, you know, I don't know. It's rare that a band comes out and really blows me away. Like, you know, Silent Planet was a band I really, really got behind. I think they're doing some amazing things. And I think you guys are right up there with them with, you know, just your songwriting. And some of your choruses are so good. From a songwriting approach, do you focus a lot on that? Or do you focus on sort of the musical nuts and bolts of a song first?
We definitely, my preferred way to write is definitely music first, because I love getting a vibe of like the song. It helps me like think of a good meaning for it, because some songs, you know, they'll give you that sad vibe or that like triumphant right. vibe. And after that, I like to write patterns. Sometimes I'll like hum a melody and try to make lyrics fit into that.
Right.
So it's been interesting, because this album's the first time I've done every chorus on a record. And I've never been somebody, I had never sang a chorus. I sang one on our last record or two. And then before that, zero singing pretty much at all. So it was definitely like a fun adventure writing melodies. It's something I've never done a lot of. And this album was the first time I really dove in hard on writing melodies. And it was a weird experience writing, like humming melodies into my, or doing little voice memos with random words, which I'm sure you do the same.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny sometimes when you'll come up with something really cool and it's like just a voice memo with random words. It's more about the melody or the rhythm than it is about the words. But then sometimes it's hard to get away from those words and you end up using some of them. They kind of inspire your lyrics later. Do you ever have that happen?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'll have a sentence that makes zero sense, but a word sounds cool with saying a certain way.
And you can never lose it.
I have to make that word
work. Yeah, I know. It's funny.
Exactly.
But that's cool, because you know, so many bands in your genre, and I'm not talking about now, I'm talking about since forever. It seems like their choruses, their clean singing, their, you know, those parts of the song are an afterthought, you know, and for you guys, it doesn't seem like that. It seems like that's the focus. And I guess maybe for you, having something to prove, you know, I've never done this before, probably contributed to how, you know, how good and how solid and how well thought out these songs are.
Absolutely. And I think somebody that deserves a lot of credit too is our producer, Drew Folk. We've been to a different producer every album we've ever done.
Yeah.
And we're 100% going back to him for the next record, because I think we just struck such a great, just like symbiotic relationship when it comes to writing.
Awesome.
And me and him like bounced so many good chorus ideas. I think this album by far has the strongest choruses we've ever had, which is attributing a lot to why this album's doing so much better than our past ones, because I think strong choruses can make an album. It's what keeps people coming back over and over again to a song, where in the past we kind of just had really heavy parts, okay choruses, and the heavy parts were good for shock value live.
Right.
But it was only getting us like 150,000 monthly listeners, because at the end of the day, it's fun live, but it's not something you're going to listen to over and over again and get stuck in your head. And I think the leap from 150,000 to 600,000 monthly listeners was because these songs finally have choruses that can dig into people's heads a little bit.
Right. Is that how you gauge success? Is that Spotify monthly listeners?
I wouldn't say it's a gauge of like overall success at all, because there's some bands out there with a lot of monthly listeners that draw 100 people a night.
Right. I don't know. I don't even know what my band's monthly listeners are. I didn't, you know. I guess this is the new wave, though. I mean, these kind of statistics are, it's the new record sales, you know.
I bring it up because our label just preaches it over and over again. Like, get on the Spotify wave. Embrace Spotify.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I mean, it's I got Spotify. I listen to your new record on Spotify. So
there we go.
There you go. I want to talk to you about a couple of your songs. The one I want to start with is Anthem of the Defeated, because when I was listening through the record, it struck me right away as a bit different. I'm like, this is a kind of a nu metal intro with a bit of a Slipknot thing going on, but different for you guys. And is that you at the beginning doing that part?
I was like, hey, I want to do something weird. And I've always been a Slipknot fan. I was like, I really want to do like some Corey Taylor yells and see what happens. So that song was just kind of like a really fun experimental track. And it was really the first song that front to back, I like mouthed the riffs and mouthed everything like musically and just had Bob lay it down.
Mouthed? Is that the way that you write?
Yeah, I can't play an instrument. Luckily me and Bob have worked together for over 10 years. And when I go and make some weird riff sounds, he's like, I know what you're trying to do. And then he'll lay it down.
That must be, I want to see a video of that. That must be so funny. To someone just external, like obviously you're trying to focus on, you know, your vision and your creativity, and Bob or whoever is trying to channel that, and it's very serious, but just from the outside looking in, it must be very, very, very funny. So I guess what's up next for you guys? Obviously you got this tour coming up. I'm sure you're going to be doing some other stuff worldwide. What's the focus? Obviously, Dark Skies is a record you guys are really behind.
We have a really big tour January through March. It's going to be announced, I think, in the next 2 to 4 weeks.
Awesome.
That one I'm really pumped, and we're direct on that tour. It's like our first, like we're direct on this tour, and it's really cool. But the next tour we're direct, we finally are playing over some bands where I think it really will like show the progress we've made in our growth, and it's really exciting. And then we're trying to do some cool Europe stuff, still trying to figure out Europe and Australia, and we're for sure going to do a headliner, our first like real A market headline tour next fall.
Awesome. Well, hey, you guys are overdue for that. I think that's going to be tremendous. I want to ask you about the song that I'm calling the hit, When Everything Means Nothing. Is that song going to be a single? Are there any plans for a video for that one?
Oh, yeah. The label owner requested a video for that one.
Yeah.
So that one's for sure happening.
Yeah, I'm on board.
We had a radio edit for it, too.
Right. Oh, shit. Already? Okay, you guys are going full on. Because I heard the record and I said, oh, yeah.
This is
the one. This is the song. So that's awesome. Best of luck with that and everything, man. And anything else to tell the people before I let you go?
Well, thank you for having me. And I've heard great things about this podcast for a long time, so I appreciate you letting me be a part of it.
Absolutely.
And thank you to anybody that took interest to listen to me talk about stuff. And sorry for all the sports. Hopefully a lot of it gets edited out so people can move right past it.
Oh, no. I'm keeping all the Cowboys talk in, especially because so many people hate the Cowboys, man. Like, so we got deep into the Cowboys. So, I mean, you're talking about the defensive coordinator and shit. So this is,
I know. Don't even get me started on the secondary. Then it's
going to
get real.
Oh, that's great, man. Well, thanks so much. Enjoy your night in Indianapolis and the rest of the tour, and, all the best, man.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
There it is with Ryan. And yes, very much a football centric conversation, but I think, you know, there's some people out there that appreciate it, and that's why there's that little 15-second skip button, right? If you just want to get to the next thing. I personally don't use it when I listen to podcasts. I even listen to the ads because I love the ads. And I, you know what? I've bought a few things from some podcasts that I listen to. Hint, hint. Anyways, Fit for a King has a brand new album out now. Go check it out. And I know exactly what song I'm going to play. Like I said, this is the hit. It's a great song. Check it out. Here it is. When Everything Means Nothing on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love, everybody. We'll see you next week. Hit that subscribe button, and we'll talk to you soon.
ones and zeros fill my eyes. Am I supposed to be like everybody else? A prisoner of my own mind. Should I give up? Should I give up? I try to smile, try to fight, just say I'm okay.
But every day feels like a hurricane.
Yeah, I was born in the rain. Yeah, I was born in the rain.
I'm yours, never seems so distant. The fear of missing out burns my vision.
Destroy me!